Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Lasted exactly 3 hours. The American League continues its dominance, and Hendricks picks up the save.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Let's get out to the man on the scene, the man himself. Always a joy to talk to our old friend Lou Kanellis. And Lou joins us on the Home Run In Hotline. Try your pizzas on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. Sweet Lou, how are you, buddy?
Lou.
Mully, David, how are you guys? Good morning.
Well, we are pumped up. We really enjoyed watching the All-Star game of 5-2. It's just fun to have local guys in it, right? Six Chicago players at the All-Star game. I get it that we didn't see Carlos Rodon pitch, but everybody else, it would have been nice to see Tim Anderson hit. But he's going to take that out on Tampa anyway. So it all worked out.
Yeah, that's what he said. He's going to get Kevin Cash back. And you know what? It was just great to have the game. I mentioned this with Corey McFerrin in the newscast following the game on Fox. You know, you don't realize what you miss until you don't have it. And not having the Midsummer Classic, having the shortened baseball season. Frankly, at this point in the year last year, we didn't even have baseball. So just to be back on the road as a reporter in the media, covering a game without a mask on, being able to interview players, and then going to the game and feeling the energy of the fans. And, you know, you guys have been here to Denver, Colorado. This is a really good sports town. And just the whole 3 days here was a lot of fun.
Lou, thanks for getting up early. We know it was a late night for you. We appreciate it because you were in the clubhouse around those players. What stood out about the post game, and did you get a chance to talk to Liam Hendricks?
I didn't, you know, it's funny. I didn't get a chance to chat with Hendricks. Caitlin Sharkey, who works with me at Fox, she did. And, you know, Hendricks has just such a great personality. I mean, this guy has fit in the Chicago on the South Side so well. He's all passion. He says whatever's on his mind. And what he told the media guys was afterwards, you know, they had him mic'd up and he lost his IFB, which is the earpiece in his ear. So he couldn't really tell what they were saying and he wasn't getting any direction. So if a producer or a director was in his ear saying, hey, watch the language, he never heard that. So he was just, you know, Liam Hendricks. The Liam Hendricks that we're accustomed to watching, at least on the mound at guaranteed rate. And he had a blast. He was put in the position that he is in every single game, you know, when he comes in at the end for the White Sox, and he did his job. Everyone afterwards, I was a little surprised. I thought Bryant might have been a little bit more disappointed after failing in the sixth inning and in the eighth inning with the bases loaded, but you know, that was really Chris Bryant that I saw back on Monday during media day too. he's gotten to the point, guys, where at his age, he's been in the game long enough now. He has his son, Kyler, his wife, that, yeah, baseball is important, but it's not life and death. This isn't the guy that we saw at the end of last year who snapped back at the media or snapped back at the fans while he struggled at the plate. This is a guy who's really put his life into perspective, takes his job seriously, wants to win, wants to play well, wants to be an all-star. But if it doesn't happen, it's not life and death for the guy.
Yeah, you know, it's a different form of maturity that we're seeing from him. And I think that, you know, he seems totally at peace whenever he's talking. He loves playing the multiple positions. He doesn't get hung up on any of this. I've got to have this spot or that spot. He just seems so, like, even keeled about, you know, I was saying to David, it's his personality is kind of Ryne Sandberg-ish. You know, he's just this sort of straight line excellence guy, and there's no real ups and downs, and he doesn't seem like he gets in any way shattered or concerned or worried about the various things going on around him. He's just kind of doing his thing, having fun, getting it going. And that'll play well wherever he winds up and if indeed they end up moving him.
Sandberg is a great example, Molly. I'll tell you what, that the personality type is almost right there on par of Ryne Sandberg's. And, yeah, they dropped 13 of their last 15. They turned from buyers to now sellers coming up to the trade deadline. He knows his name is front and center. He talked about it ad nauseum here about being traded. And listen, he's accepting it. I asked him, you know, you've been through so much over the course of your career, and now you're a father. Do you worry about moving your family? You become such a great Cub. And he said, no, it's part of the business. I've accepted it. And you're right. He has matured. He's ready to move on. And like I started with you guys, you don't understand. You don't really realize what you miss until you don't have it anymore. I think that's going to be the case with Chris Bryant in this town. Yep. As a media member, the guy has always talked to us. He's always been respectful to the media. He's loved the fans at Wrigley Field and Cub fans, and he's appreciated being a Cub. And, you know, we saw him have just an unbelievable rookie year when he was the NL Rookie of the Year and an MVP award and winning a World Series. And if he leaves, if this team moves him, you know, it's not going to be easy to fill that spot at third base, folks. It's just not with an MVP.
Lou, let's go to the other side of town. Tim Anderson gets named to the team. A lot of controversy before that he wasn't on it, but he goes to Denver, and it looks like he had the time of his life. Yeah, we would have loved to have seen him get to the plate, and he was stranded in the on-deck circle. But how would you describe just how he handled the spotlight and just how much respect he commands around the league, because it seemed as if, just watching from afar, that came through to me.
Yeah, listen, it's going to take time for him to command the respect that a Manny Machado or even a Fernando Tatis Jr. has in baseball right now, Dave. And Frank Thomas is right. It shouldn't have taken Carlos Correa, you know, saying, listen, I'm not coming because my wife is pregnant. It shouldn't have taken that for Tim Anderson to be here in Denver. You look at what the guy has done. I mean, you know, since 2019, nobody in baseball has a better batting average than Tim Anderson. And I think it's just going to take time for Anderson to earn the respect of fans around baseball. He's earning it quickly amongst his peers, amongst his all-star teammates, but he's doing it at the plate. And maybe Tony La Russa had the best quote last week when he said, you don't really appreciate Tim Anderson unless you watch him every single day. He was happy to be here with his wife and his kids. He embraced the situation. He had a lot of fun. You know, the kid was a hell of a basketball player in high school, at Hillcrest High School in Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Never thought he'd be in a position where he'd be one of Major League Baseball's best, and all of a sudden he finds himself an all-star here in Denver. But make no mistake about it, guys. When you talk to the four White Sox, whether it was Lance Lynn, Liam Hendricks, Tim Anderson, or Carlos Rodon, this three-day stretch was fun, but it's all about winning the World Series. And both guys, Rodon and Anderson, told me, I said to them, don't tell me if the White Sox are going to win the World Series. Tell me why. And both had the same answer, because we're the hungriest team out there.
Wow. Yeah, that is fascinating. You know, we asked a question this morning, how many of these all-stars, these six players, will be back a year from now in Chicago? And it's a mean-spirited question, and I'm still stewing over it. But it's hard to say that you'll have both guys on the Cubs back. I worry about the Sox pitching. I think a lot of it will depend on how the season ends and what could be a glorious finish to the season. But that's, you know, I think Liam Hendricks, we know, is coming back, and Tim's under contract. But I think other than that, there could be four guys departing. I'll split the difference and say one of the two pitchers come back. But David's going with four returnees, which I think is awesome.
Well, I would love to have four returnees. And you know, how does Rick Hahn let Carlos Rodon go now? Now, I get it. You're not going to get him back for 1 year, $3 million. But now there's something about lefties in the game that just makes them a little bit more valuable. Then you got Lance Lynn, who's an absolute workhorse, who frankly could have started that game last night for the American League, unless, you know, only because it was showtime here in Denver and they gave the nod to Shohei Ohtani. So how do you let Lance Lynn go, and especially after you traded Dane Dunning? I mean, I'm with you, Dave. I think you bring back all four. You have to. And I get it. It's going to be expensive. But let's start a tone with this White Sox team. When the Cubs won the World Series, guys, back in 2016 with that young nucleus, you thought, heck, they're going to be in the World Series maybe two, three times over the next five seasons. And it happened once. Why not let it happen on the South side? And if it means paying extra, like the Dodgers do and like the Yankees do, then let's act like a big market baseball club, spend the money, and do it.
Lou's getting all fired up with the White
Sox.
He's right. Great points, Lou. Speaking of that, you mentioned Rodon. Did not get the pitch last night. I had somebody on my Twitter feed say that it reminded them of Britt Burns way back when, got to the All-Star game and didn't pitch. What was the story behind Rodon not being used?
I just think, you know, he was at the back end of, you know, a slew of great pitchers. He, from what I understand, was informed early on by Kevin Cash that he wouldn't be pitching. And you know, Rodon was just, listen, the guy didn't think, when I talked to him on Monday, he looked at me, he goes, are you kidding? Did I ever think I'd be here? Heck no. With the shoulder and wrist injuries he had been through early in his career, Tommy John surgery in 2019. He is as not being non-tendered by the White Sox.
Right.
Then having to settle for a one-year, $3 million deal. He was as surprised as anyone with his 7-3 start, the no-hitter he threw, being a Cy Young candidate at least at the midway point in the season, and then sitting amongst all-stars like Gerrit Cole. Even he can't believe it.
Did you have a favorite part of that game? I mean, you know, we were talking about it earlier. I loved when Tatis Jr. was talking when the home run was hit and he throws his hands on his head. I thought that's a moment that I'll remember for a while, but I'm not sure there were any other ones that are going to just stay with me beyond the next week, Lou.
No, I'm with you, Mully. And the game is being taken over by the young guys, Tatis Jr., Vladimir Guerrero Jr., youngest MVP ever in an All-Star game at the age of 22. He hit that moonshot 468 feet. I'm pretty sure it's the longest home run ever recorded in an All-Star game. But for me personally, and I'm a 57-year-old guy, grew up a baseball fan, you know, in Oak Lawn on the South Side, I really took in the pregame tribute to the late Henry Aaron, who I grew up watching and really thought about what this man went through. And 25 All-Star games, are you kidding me? And to have his wife, Billy, out there on the field alongside Aaron Judge, and I'm pretty sure it was Freddie Freeman as well. Yeah. And the media seats were in the right field bleachers. And I really took it all in, and so did a lot of fans. And then they paid tribute to the 9 All-Stars that we've lost since the last All-Star game. For me, as a baseball fan over the course of my lifetime, an older guy, That, to me, was the highlight of the night.
I've got to ask you, Lou, because you are a man of such sartorial splendor, what was the chatter like post-game about the uniforms?
Oh, they're awful.
They were.
I swear to God, I walked out. I walked out onto the field, Dave, and a couple of the guys were out there stretching. And we were out here early because we had a 4 o'clock Chicago time newscast, which meant it was 3 o'clock here. They looked like pajamas. And I really couldn't tell who was who. And I just thought they were awful. Please bring back just the regular uniforms. I don't, you know, I get it's all about money and throwing something merchandise-wise up on the hangar. So there's another option for fans to buy. But I was not a fan of either. Actually, I thought the American League's was even worse. That color blue is just awful.
I said to David that, like, they should contact Brooks Boyer and his team, have them come out there and do those City Connect uniforms or whoever did the Cubs ones. I mean, those are cool uniforms both sides of town. If you're going to make a change like that, don't put a man in pajamas.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I think that those White Sox uniforms that Boyer and the crew put together, I think that those are the best out there right now in the marketplace. Mm. And last night, I'm not a fan.
Lou, you and Caitlin done a good, nice job out there this week. You've been there since the players arrived. Just wanted to, before we let you go, obviously the Wilson Contreras comments resonated here in Chicago. You were able to talk to Craig Kimbrell and Chris Bryant on Monday. How would you summarize their reaction to what Wilson Contreras said about the team lacking focus?
Caitlin talked to Kimbrell, so I'm not going to tell you what I thought, what Kimbrell thought. I will say that Bryant said that Contreras is, you know, allowed his own perspective, his own opinion on the way the team played. He didn't agree with it. He understands that they've struggled, but at least he said, in my case, and I'm not going to talk about any other player on that roster, in my case, I come to the ballpark ready to play every single day. And he goes, while I respect Wilson's opinion, I don't agree with it.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think that's exactly what we expected from Chris Bryant. And you know, I don't have a problem with it. We talked to Ozzy about it a little bit earlier. He had a little different perspective, both as a manager who's played with guys on the team and obviously as a longtime baseball player who's dealt with a lot of different managers. So it was it's fascinating to get different takes on it. I don't know that it's going to affect this team moving forward, Lou, in any way. I thought it was weird when Contreras and Rizzo had their little issue in the dugout. So it makes you wonder if there's a deeper rooted issue. But for the most part, I would hope that it doesn't affect the way they approach the second half or specifically the trade deadline.
I don't think we'll see it reflect the win-loss column because at this point, I feel that the organization has made a decision that they're going to, you know, go in a different direction after dropping 13 of their last 15. But as a media guy, when I saw Contreras come out with those comments, I wasn't surprised. I mean, the guy plays with unbelievable passion. He's Venezuelan. He's been like this since day one as a member of the organization. Yeah, he's got some. He should have some juice in that locker room. No one in baseball, at least in the National League, has played more innings behind the plate than Wilson Contreras has. The guy busts his ass every time he's out there. And if he wants to get behind the mic and challenge his teammates, why not? Keuchel did it on the south side. Yep. What's the difference?
Great stuff, Lou. Thank you, buddy. Great catching up with you.
Thanks, Lou.
Always a pleasure, boys.
Great job.
That is Lou Kanellis. Did a great job out in Denver. Always does a great job. I love Lou.
Yeah, getting up early, too, because they're an hour behind, and it had to be a late night. So it sounded like it was worth staying up for, though. Had to be a lot of fun. Just back in the element of covering a game the way that we have become accustomed to covering games but couldn't for so long because of the pandemic. That looked normal last night. That looked familiar, and they and you could hear it in his voice. He was having fun.
It was weirdly normal, if
yeah,
that makes any
right.
sense.
Yeah.
Thank God the pandemic's over and we never have to worry about that again. Oh, no, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. You know what I mean.
I do.
It sort of resembled what we wanted to look like and what we remember so fondly when we could you know, worry, not have to worry about things.
312-644-6767. Back to your calls after the break. Molly and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Tim, what'd you think of the uniform?
I think we could do better. I think we can do better, man. We got to get some players' opinions on that. It's pretty cool, though.
And Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's pretty cool to be an all-star. I don't know about the uniform, but that was a great answer from Tim Anderson.
I like being here. Next time, can I wear something different? Something I choose or have input into choosing and designing.
That's a good idea. Yeah. And like I said, call Brooks. Get those guys. Well, put the City Connect uniform together.
Tim Anderson was involved in the design of the South Side White Sox uniform.
Was he correct? Part of the crew?
I think he might have been involved in that.
I think they went to Nike, and Nike's like, here's what we had in mind. Now, man, look at this. Ba, ba, ba!
No. Okay. Nice pajamas.
Like it. All right. 312-644-6767. David, I don't have to tell you, but we should let people know that Score Listener Line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com.
And the BetQL network is available nationwide on the Odyssey mobile app and website, over 10,000 home and auto-connected devices, and BetQLnetwork.com.
Let's start with Ron. Ron's on the South Side. Morning, Ron. How are you?
Hey, morning, fellas. Look here. I was listening to Lou. Certainly, we like to see Rodon and Lynn. Only one issue, guys.
Okay.
One big issue, Michael Kopech.
Wow.
Because eventually, so you're going to want to get him into that starting rotation. So I think when the Sox look at it, you're going to have to make a decision, not only for financial reasons, but, again, you know, as far as how you want to set things up with him getting into that starting rotation. So that's it. But you know what? I will be talking to you all Friday for sure.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah. You're the best. Guys. Thank you, buddy.
So that's an interesting dilemma, and what a problem it is to face if you are the White Sox and Rick Hahn. If you are looking ahead to next year, do you want to make room in your rotation for Michael Kopech? Do you envision him being a 25 to 30 start a year guy? Or in today's newfangled way of looking at pitching, does he continue to fill this sort of undefined role where you use him as a specialist? That's probably the best way to describe him, right?
Yes.
He's not quite a closer. He's not quite the eighth inning guy. He's the guy, you know, break glass in case of emergency. Michael Kopech is there to come to the rescue.
Michael Kopech is a starting pitcher. And he will be a starting pitcher in the rotation next year. I don't think there's any doubt about it. There are people that even believe if you could figure out a way to get him in the starting rotation for the playoffs, you owe it to yourself to do it. And I don't think you could figure out a way. But he will be a part of what you're doing moving forward. He's a starting pitcher. Michael Kopech is a key piece of the rotation moving forward and starting next year for sure.
It's a fun question to ask during the All-Star break when we see two guys with expiring contracts representing the White Sox at the All-Star game. So we have to kind of, how many of these guys will be here next year? And you want to speculate. Doesn't it all depend? I guess I'm asking you.
Yes.
How much of it depends on what happens in October and what they're coming off of? If
that's
they're
fair.
Defending a World Series next year,
totally different
versus
animal.
What they, you know, fell short of, and why did they come one game short? Did they come one pitcher short, one pitcher shy? Are they less likely to want to say goodbye to both guys? Are they willing to step up and spend for what it would take to retain both Rodon and Lance Lynn? Context is important in that question.
What's extraordinary when you really stop and think about it is that the White Sox came into this season and they felt, we have two. We have Giolito and we have Dallas Keuchel. Who's going to be our third guy? Because we only had two last year in the playoffs. Okay, we'll trade Dane Dunning, who, by the way,
did start over Dylan Cease when you got to the playoffs. Started. Didn't last very long.
15 pitches.
But you traded him for Lance Lynn. So you felt, okay, we got three. We got three, and then Dylan Cease might come around. Oh, and we could probably get a fifth. What do we do? Ah, that guy we DFA'd. Let's, and he wasn't. He was non-tendered. But that guy, we'll give him a small chunk of change so he can rehab with us. The fact that Lynn ends up as an all-star and has been so bloody good, the fact that Carlos Rodon has turned into the entity you thought you were getting when you used a third overall pick on him is what's changed everything for the White Sox. So now, instead of maybe having three and piecing it together, they got a five-man staff in a league where very few teams can say that.
And Dylan Cease, don't look now, but has started to resemble the guy that they expected him to be. He looks like he's getting it, right? I think that obviously the other day he had a tough first inning, but boy, when he settles down and gets locked in and with command.
He's a future of the rotation for a while.
And he's a weapon too when you talk about October and guys who are on or not on the playoff roster, even though he's on. Okay.
Don't you think?
Yes, but I do. But I don't think this is always an automatic yes when you're talking about a fifth starter on a playoff team.
Is he the fifth starter?
Well, who else is it? Giolito?
Michael? I'm just asking.
You can't go into the postseason having those guys as your fifth starter. Both of those guys deserve a chance to prove that they are the wily veterans that you know them to be or that they're here to be. Right?
Especially
Keuchel.
I think it's really interesting to see how they're going to deploy them and how they're going to use them and what they're going to get from them. John is in Lexington. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. What's going on? I think Houston's going to be a real good series for the Sox coming off the break because the last time we played Houston, their pitching cleaned our clocks, man. We looked silly.
Yep.
It swept us all four games, and I think to see how these guys are all rested now from the break and to see how they deal with the potential playoff teams, I think we might play Houston in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you're not going to Houston.
Fair assumption.
At home against Houston this weekend.
This weekend.
And that should start Friday with a good game. I'm looking forward to this series. I think it was fun to see the Sox. Listen, they swept Baltimore, okay?
Yep.
I get it. But didn't Baltimore just go down and beat Houston? I mean, I'm just saying, weird, random things happen in baseball.
Right.
But these are two teams that do seem to be on the same trajectory in the 2021 season. And I think it's important for the White Sox to be good enough to beat Houston.
It's also an important reminder of when you play the Astros, you want to be in Chicago in that ballpark. And that might be the motivating factor that serves the biggest purpose in the second half of the season.
Yes.
You don't take your foot off the gas because you have an 8-game lead in the Central. You keep accelerating and going for it because you want home field advantage when you're playing teams like the Astros in October.
Bring Aloy up for this series.
Ozzie said that.
Bring Lou Bob back for this series.
Slow down.
All right.
Slow down.
Grandal can catch with one leg.
Get that crutch out of the way.
He blocked it with the crunch. Didn't you see that on fire?
You know, I want to get back to one thing, though, because, and if you have other Sox thoughts, you know, 312-644-6767, more than welcome. When talking about the pitching in October or down the stretch and how the staff will be handled in the second half, kind of preparing for the next big moment, the next high leverage situation, there's a lot of trust that you will place in the manager. Tony La Russa has been here before, and this may end up being why it all makes sense in the end, in the Sox's mind. They're probably, you know, laughing or cringing or holding their breath or biting their tongue because all the criticism that has gone Tony La Russa's way, they feel like in the end they'll know why. Everybody will see why, because he knows how to handle pitchers over the course of a 162-game season. And certainly in the playoffs. And this came to mind yesterday when I saw a tweet from our guy, Steve Stone, mm-hmm. who, by the way, happy birthday, Stoney.
Yes.
Today's his birthday.
What a great man.
Great man, terrific broadcaster, terrific insight. He said, and he tweeted this, most of you will have a definitive opinion on this tweet. I will not respond. For 52 years, I've played for and evaluated over 200 managers. Earl Weaver was great, but our Tony La Russa is the best I've ever seen. The perfect manager doesn't exist. Tony is about winning, always was.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said, Tony. That's what he tweeted, more accurately. The best there ever was. That's from Steve Stone.
That's strong. That's strong.
So
that takes into account a lot of years, for God's sake.
52 of them.
I'm talking about Tony, his years as well. That's not just about this year. That's about career years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, I don't have any problem giving Tony La Russa some credit. I think we did a very good job, and I'm not talking about you and I. I'm talking generally speaking, we here in Chicago, we baseball fans, did a very good job of criticizing Tony when he needed criticizing. And he did earn some criticism early in the year. There were some missteps and some lack of knowledge of rules and shocking kind of stuff. I don't blame him strictly for that. That was an organizational issue, I suppose. But the fact of the matter is that you look at where they're at right now, and how do you not feel really good about the White Sox season, given the amount of injuries they've had to endure?
And you may not have the anxiety going into October that you might have had last year. And why this all came to mind is when you said the name Dane Dunning. And with all due respect, the fact that he was pulled after 15 pitches, the fact that he was on the mound in the first place, brought into question the judgment of the manager at the time, Rick Renteria. The reason he was not brought back in part was because of the way he handled the pitching staff. Would you agree with that?
I think it was the way he handled the playoffs.
Well,
but yes, but that's part of it.
That's all part of it. The anxiety that you sense when he was standing there like a linebacker, it showed in
I'll
the decisions
never forget that
he made.
That was poor Rick Renteria. I mean, a lovely man, super nice guy.
I respect him,
I don't
too.
Know why you attack him repeatedly.
I'm not attacking.
How dare you bring it up again? I'm with you. I'll say it again because I feel bad every time that I kind of repeat this, but I really like Rick Renteria. I thought he was a great guy. He was at the fan convention when he was complimented by a guy that had some issues, and he bounded off the stage and hugged the guy. He's a great person. But that, how could you go into another year with him managing this team based on just the linebacker, the way he stood, and he was right on my TV, so you'd see a guy, and there's Rick, like, tormented,
ready to jump off the screen.
I mean, it was. Look, I could feel the stress I felt was multiplied by his active stress watching. It was like I've never seen a guy watch something with that much stress.
And a lot of Sox fans agree with you, but I think it's regardless of our opinion, regardless of what we feel about it and what we think about it and what fans think about it, the White Sox made the move. Okay, they were compelled, maybe because of the Jerry Reinsdorf factor and the cronyism and the way that he hijacked the process, all remain, you can't change history. That all happened. But the reason it happened was because of what we're talking about. Tony La Russa's experience in handling pitching staffs down the stretch and handling bullpens, especially in high leverage situations, are what put him in a position to be considered by guys like Steve Stone as one of the best managers ever. And so that's what you have this season that you didn't have last year. That confidence, that belief that if having to make the choices, you know, similar to the kinds of choices we're talking about, when to go to Kopech, when to go to Dylan Cease, who's going to be sitting, who's going to be starting, you trust Tony La Russa because he has been there and he has done that.
Can I have a moment to just celebrate your use of the word cronyism? That's one of my favorite words ever. It is a negative word, man. Cronyism. It's just, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't it kind of, when you think cronyism, you never think like, oh God, what this company needs is some good cronyism.
But did I use it incorrectly?
You used it perfectly.
Okay. I don't disagree with that. But
I just started to smile to myself because I love that word.
It's the kind of word that you drop in to a backhanded compliment.
Yes.
Okay.
Perfectly.
So in saying positive things about Tony La Russa, you mentioned cronyism because you don't want people to forget how we got here.
Exactly.
Okay.
You can't get away from cronyism.
So,
oh, that's
it's
awesome.
There. It's there.
I mean, nepotism. It's not a great word, but cronyism. That
it's so just, Chicago.
Oh my God! Like really? You're because he's your childhood friend? Like yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Hey, I know a guy.
I know another guy. Yeah,
that's so beautiful. All right, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw, The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I got to ask you, a Japanese pitcher got the win in this game, an Australian pitcher got the save. Tell us why that's good for baseball.
It's a world game. Now this is going to be shown everywhere. I mean, let's be honest, anything Shohei does over here is going to be shown in Japan everywhere. But me being able to do anything in this game is going to be broadcast hopefully in Australia and hopefully around so we can get more Australian kids involved, whether then that turns into Australian kids, New Zealand kids, European kids. I know I did an interview with the UK guy the other day and they're talking about doing I actually offered up to him, like, let's do some clinics in the UK.
Yeah.
Let's get, I know Jazz Chisholm played for the UK national team in the World Baseball Classic qualifiers. Screw it, let's go. Let's get him together. Let's go over to England. Let's do something and get some clinics together and let's really expand this game around the world. And all around the world.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of The Score. That is the voice of Liam Hendricks. He was on the postgame yesterday on the MLB Network, and I think it's a great point. Fun to hear him talk about that, and we know that there were a lot of international flags flying as we watched the All-Star game. There were a lot of people from different countries and from different areas that play the game of baseball. We know that it's a lot of our hemisphere. We understand that. But fascinating to see that you have a Japanese starter that is the winner of the game, and you have an Australian closer, and in between you got a Dominican MVP. And all the way around, a lot of different nations are represented, one of which, of course, is Cuba.
Yes, and that's the other end of the spectrum. And certainly it was a celebration of the globalization of baseball. And also what comes with that is, you know, Aroldis Chapman had SOS Cuba on his hat, and there are growing concerns about what's going on in Cuba. And that resonates here in Chicago because of how much representation there is on the White Sox roster from Cuban players, from Jose Abreu, Luis Robert, who isn't here, but certainly Yoan Moncada. The pipeline exists, and the access and the thoroughfare between Havana and Chicago has been well traveled. And this week has been a very difficult week for people in Cuba. You see protests, you see a spread of coronavirus, spreading concern,
right,
and unrest, and it's become a political issue, and things are much different than they were, frankly, when those guys came over, and especially maybe in the case of Moncada and Luis Robert, there was more of an open access maybe to America from Cuba than there has been in recent years. And so there's this feeling that there's some concern among players like Chapman, and it's got to be weighing heavily on guys like Abreu and veterans who still have family over there and are, you know, making their living here, but it's never that far away.
Yeah, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to be trying to play baseball and worried about family and worried about political events going on in your country. Certainly, Venezuelan players have been through it. You know, we've seen Wilson Contreras try to express that. He had a sleeve on at one point. Things were really ugly in Venezuela. I don't know how much better they've gotten, frankly. We could have asked Ozzy that question, what it's like to try to manage or try to be a player when your homeland is suffering some turmoil. And that is definitely the case in what's going on in Cuba. And it's interesting because, you know, Cuba started to open and you started to see some people. I had some friends that actually visited Cuba that was this sort of renaissance. There were still, you know, it was before the hotels were built and all the other stuff that was you thought would hit. Well, then there's political change, and now Cuba's closed down again, and we have no relation with Cuba. And here we go again. There's another turn, and now Cuba is open, and our relationship with Cuba is more open than it's been. And Meanwhile, it looks like you're in danger of having another revolution, frankly.
It does.
To overthrow the government.
It's scary.
Because there's a lot of nasty stuff going on.
Yeah, it's scary to watch. And you can imagine, it's hard to, I guess, imagine if you had family over there and you're one of these players trying to concentrate on being a professional athlete and, you know, focusing on a baseball team and a baseball game, and you have a lot of the other issues come into play. And you're right about the country. I mean, things have changed. I was fortunate enough to be part of the media delegation that went with MLB in December of 2015. So we spent a week, just under a week in Havana, and traveled over there. Brian McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago, Sierra Santos was part of that group too. She's now in Arizona. And we went, and Jose Abreu was among the players,
right.
Yasiel Puig.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, it was a celebration. There was a lot of optimism, and there was a lot of hope, because that was December 2015 of the pathways becoming wider and the opportunities becoming greater. And that has changed dramatically since that point in time. And obviously, you know, Molly, we haven't even mentioned the most significant Cuban influence in terms from a baseball perspective in Chicago, Mini Minoso. Mm. And so that was where he was from. And it was one of the more memorable stories I've ever done when I was at the Tribune, was finding the house that he built in 1955.
Wow.
And having family who still live there, and going there to talk to the family member who still remembered Uncle Minnie. And not knowing, I was dropped off by my cab driver. My, you know, Spanish was spotty. I had directions and an address, and they dropped me off. And it was not the greatest neighborhood. And I'm actually looking into this house, and I'm trying to peer through the window.
Oh my God!
And well, I'm not like peeping Tom.
That's
here.
It, peeping
no,
David.
No, 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 no.
What the hell?
I'm trying to look from afar. And I'm actually standing outside the front porch. I'm trying, do I have the right house? Do I have the right house? And Molly, no lie, I look inside, and you can see from the street or from the sidewalk this painting of Minnie Minoso. It was hanging on the wall. And I thought, okay, I got the right house. I'm going to knock at the door. And I knocked at the door and waited there. And I think I remember it wasn't like there was no answer. And then the neighbor came over. And she's like, oh, she's just sleeping. She's really, she works. And anyway, they let me in. It was a terrific visit and a good memory. But it also just spoke to the significance of Minnie Minoso in Chicago.
We lost Minnie in 2015, I believe, died at the age of 89. And, you know, I just remember as a kid that he played in like every decade. They would have him, they'd roll him out for a game because he was, how many parts of decades did he play? It was like, it was some thing they used to do, was let Minnie play for a decade.
He was 90 when he died. He lived
90.
To be 90.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It was such a.
And he's probably still going to play before it's all said and done somehow. Wasn't that a thing they did with Minnie Minoso? They would have him, they would let him like kind of play in every decade or something.
Yeah, that was his claim to fame, or
right.
One of the claims to fame. But he was, you know, beyond that, that was sort of gimmicky. But he had credentials
oh, no,
as
no.
a player,
yeah, of course,
that were legitimate and should be, you know, should be honored in the Hall of Fame.
Right, but that's just the way I remember it,
yeah.
Because it was always a big deal when they would have him play. You know, so I'm just curious, when you say your Spanish was spotty. Is that like cerveza fría, por favor? Like what? How spotty? I can only order booze?
Something about Minnie Minoso Casa.
Okay. So you don't actually speak much Spanish.
No.
Is it high school Spanish?
I had high school Spanish. Okay. I had 4 years of high school Spanish that that was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So very muy pequeño.
Yeah. But you are obviously even – if it is muy peligroso, you are muy confidento, which is a word I just made up. But you had
a
lot of confidence
to do
that.
It was so spotty.
Yeah.
The confidence was, you've been there, okay? You've been in this situation. I don't know that it was confidence or desperation. And when you're chasing a story, you have a degree of both, right? So there was confidence that I could figure it out once I got there, but there was desperation with, I don't know what else I'm going to write if I don't. So you talk to the cab driver and you try to make your case about, and you have this address and you have your phone and you're talking to somebody along the way and you're hoping that you get the right house and you're hoping that they let you in. And so that was maybe.
That's great. That's really good.
That was the memorable.
Yeah, that's
trip.
Outstanding. I'd like to go back and read that story, frankly. It'd be very interesting. Seriously.
Yeah, it was fun. It was December of 2015. And that was the trip where Jose Abreu was being reunited with his son. At the time, I think he was four or five.
Yeah.
And I can remember them meeting in the hotel, running up. It was one of these Hallmark moments.
Yeah.
And it was just a real cool trip. And again, a lot of hope that people left Havana with that day or that week or that month that has evaporated. And now it's a much different scenario and a much different situation.
Around the All-Star game, did you see the Freddie Freeman video where his son, he's got the cutest little kid. He's just this tiny little guy. And he like went up to Fernando Tatis Jr. and hugged him. And then Tatis is like, hey, get over, give me another. Like he gives him this big hug. It was just like, I mean, they're roughly the same age, I think, Fernando Tatis Jr. and the 5-year-old. He's so young.
He is.
And that, you know, he's got a certain, you know, effervescence to him. And I'm sure that appealed to the kid and his father and Freddie were kind of having fun. It's just fantastic.
Tatis Jr. is closer in age to Freddie Freeman's son than he is to Nelson Cruz. You know, so if he's 22 and you do the math.
It's so wild. That's absolutely correct.
It is wild. Freddie Freeman, really, I got a lot of time for him. He's a fun guy.
So like does Tony Rizzo.
That's right. That's his guy.
He struck him out. Right. God, that was one of the great moments of the season. Don't you remember?
That special time.
You know who loved that? Wilson Contreras. 312-645. I'm just trying to skip through it. I'm not going to give out the phone number. We're going to bring in Dan and Layla next, and we're going to have a chat with them. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.